The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And my name is Anthony Chibariwe, and I'm sitting in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. We are coming to you live from our KPCG studio in Edmond, Oklahoma. You can get the live stream at kpcg.fm and also at thetrumpet.com. I'd like to start today by just making an appeal to you, the listener, to check out our websites, kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com. If you go to thetrumpet.com right now, you'll find new material from our latest news magazine, so do check that out. Every day we're coming up with new content, so you don't want to miss that. So I want to encourage you to get into thetrumpet.com, and just, as you become more familiar with the content that we have on our website, there are some things that you will start to notice. You start to notice that generally we categorize everything that we write in at least one of four main prophetic categories or trends. Virtually everything that we write falls into one of four main prophetic trends. And these trends are the declining influence of Anglo-America, the rising power in Europe, the growing threat of Iran, and the ascendancy of Russia, China, and other Asian powers. Obviously, we watch many other trends, but these are the main trends that the Bible says that will dominate world news in the time that we're living in right now. And that gives us a big overview. If you've ever wondered, how do we select articles for thetrumpet.com? Well, we use those guidelines, those four trends. They help us really sift the important news and the most important news. I mean, there's a lot of news out there, and I'm not saying that it's not important. It is important, but here at thetrumpet.com, we like to focus on what's really, really important, what you really, really need to know based on Bible prophecy. On today's show, I'd like to talk to you about the second largest continent in the world. It's the second largest continent in the world, both in terms of population and also in terms of geographical size. I'd like to talk to you about Africa and about how much it's directly tied to all of those four trends that I just mentioned. And we'll start with Ethiopia. The headquarters of the African Union, which is Africa's main governing body, is Ethiopia. So I think it makes sense to start with Ethiopia. So we'll start there. When African Union leaders go to Ethiopia, they meet in this fancy $200 million building that was built by China. That building was built by China and financed by China. The Guardian wrote about that building. They had this quote about that building. They said that it is seen as a symbol of Beijing's thrust for influence in Africa and access to the continent's natural resources. End quote. But that's not all. There was a recent report by the French newspaper Le Monde, which said that when the Chinese constructed the building, they bugged it with hidden microphones, which were all over the place. According to the report, which came out very recently, technicians noticed that for every night between midnight and 2 a.m., when the building was empty, there was a mysterious peak in data usage coming out of that building. Even though there was no one in the building, there was a peak this mysterious peak in data usage, what was that all about? Well, according to the report, confidential data was being copied onto servers in China. Now, of course, China denies any wrongdoing, but we know that it has a history of doing this, of espionage. It denied any wrongdoing, and its ambassador to the African Union said that the report was essentially fake news that was intended to strain relations between China and Africa. He said this, China-Africa relations have brought about benefits and a lot of opportunities. Africans are happy with it, others are not. And by others, he, of course, is referring primarily to the American and British-speaking peoples. And it is true that America and Britain, they've had a strong influence in Africa, and that influence is waning, for sure. They still have influence, but it's declining, just as it's declining in many other parts of the world. And with that decline, it's opening up opportunities for nations like China. Here at thetrumpet.com and at kpcg.fm, we do watch this decline of American and British influence because it was prophesied in the Bible. And we also watch the rise of nations like China because it was also prophesied in the Bible. And if you get onto thetrumpet.com, you become a lot more familiar with those prophecies. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of good things that China does in Africa. I don't want to make it sound like everything that China does in Africa is bad. I've lived in Africa for most of my life, and I know that not only from what I see in the news, but also from personal experience. But there is a lot that's also bad. For example, if China did actually bug the African Union headquarters building, that's very bad. Now, that's all despite the fact that China has pledged about $60 billion in aid and investment to Africa. I mean, that's good money. But if China spends this money without much regard to human rights abuses in some of those countries, which it has tended to do, then that's not good. China has a tendency of just doing business with anyone, any dictator out there, without any regard to human rights. So essentially, that's business at all costs, right? Or any cost. And it gets to a point where it's almost exploitation, right? Anyway, I won't spend too much on that, but I think it paints a vivid picture of how much nations like China are frankly exploiting Ethiopia and Africa as a whole. Again, please do check our website for what we've written about this. If you do a search on our website, you might find a few articles on this subject. One is called Exploiting Africa. Another one is The Resource War. And another one, The Battleground. All these articles, they talk about the competition for raw materials in Africa. And you see nations like China getting ahead. And these are all trends tied to Bible prophecy. We'll take a quick break now. And when we come back, we'll focus on another country that wants to exploit Ethiopia. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Anthony Chibariwe. We are coming to you live from Edmond, Oklahoma. I'm sitting in for your regular host, Stephen Fleury, who hosts this show from Edstone, England. We're coming to you from Edmond, Oklahoma. And I want to spend a little bit more time on another country which wants to exploit Ethiopia. And that country is Iran. We talk a lot about Iran on this program, and there is a good reason we do that. But first, before I get into that, let me just give you a brief background on what has been happening in Ethiopia. I'll just start with the news with an item from IOL News that was published on Monday, and it's titled "Ethiopia is at the precipice." This is how the article began. "Never have the stakes in Ethiopia been so high. Political tensions are at a knife edge, and the future stability of the country and its prospects for development hang in the balance." That's pretty dramatic. And maybe just to give you an idea of how Ethiopia has gotten itself to this point, well, Ethiopia is a country that's severely divided along ethnic lines. Since 1991, it was ruled by a coalition of four parties, and these four parties were from four different ethnic groups. But the party that dominates this ruling coalition is from an ethnic group that only makes up 6% of Ethiopia, and nearly everyone else has felt marginalized by this minority group. So there have been a lot of people taking to the streets to show the government their disappointment with how it's running the country, how it's marginalizing certain groups. And a lot of those protests have become violent, maybe on the part of the protesters themselves, but also on the part of the government forces. So you end up with this vicious cycle where the protesters are protesting against the government, and then the government clamps down on them, and then the protesters start protesting against the heavy hands of the government, and you have this vicious cycle that just goes on and on and on. The article continued. It said this: "Up until the last few weeks, most of the country's opposition leaders and many of their supporters have been locked up as political prisoners. But with the groundswell of popular discontent and burgeoning street protests, the government was compelled to release more than 6,000 political prisoners in January, another 700 2 weeks ago, and a further 1,500 last week." The article continues: "The governing coalition started to lose its grip on power in the face of mass protests following the 2015 elections, which the opposition claimed were rigged. The government responded with the repression. The government responded with repression by passing restrictive laws, intimidating and imprisoning the opposition, independent media, and civil society leaders. While political adversaries were crushed, the government tried to co-opt the elites. Hundreds of people were killed in the ensuing 2 years of protests that rocked the two most populous provinces of Oromia and Amara. The situation became so grave that the presidents of the two provinces recently announced that they supported the protests and demanded an end to the dominance of the leading party in the ruling coalition." Now, the article continued and said this, and I want you to notice this. It says, "Ethiopia has now reached a point of no return." A point of no return. It says, "Even the usually quiet suburbs of the capital, occupied by the business and political elite, have been rocked by protests. Prime Minister Haile Mariam announced on February 15th that he was stepping down in order to create political space, something unprecedented in modern-day Ethiopia," the article writes. "Actually, he has been instructed by his party to step down because of poor governance, the unrest, and failing to protect civilians." The article continues, "The unraveling of the ruling party, the ruling coalition's grip on power was too much for the old guard, which supported the declaration of a six-month state of emergency." And by the way, that state of emergency, it was imposed soon after the day after the prime minister resigned, and it was actually approved today. Parliament in Ethiopia approved it today. The article continues, "Far from regaining control, security measures only served to embolden protesters demanding the release of all political prisoners and fresh democratic elections. Now, I want you to notice the conclusion of this article. It says, "The potential for chaos and ethnic bloodshed in the country is real, and Ethiopia needs a political way out of this crisis. There seems to be only one way forward, for the ruling coalition to call early elections ahead of 2020. Elections would reduce tensions and marginalize extremists that threaten to let the genie of ethnic violence out of the bottle." Did you notice that last part about extremists that threaten to let the genie of ethnic violence out of the bottle? Well, this is where Iran comes into the picture. Geopolitical Futures, which is a think tank, they had an excellent article about this on February 21st, and it was titled, "Ethiopia's Unrest Invites Global Competition." It talked about a handful of countries that want to exploit the Ethiopian crisis, and then it said this, "Iran also strives to have a strong presence in the region. Until recently, Iran was a patron of both Sudan and Somalia, which are Ethiopia's neighbors. But then Saudi Arabia paid each to switch sides, and Iran lost its place. Ethiopia could be a replacement. Iran is already close to having a strategic control of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which is a narrow waterway north of the Horn of Africa, through its influence over militants in Yemen. That control is what Iran cares most about in the region." That was Geopolitical Futures, and that's essentially what we've been writing about. And we've been writing about it based on Bible prophecy. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury has written extensively about it in his booklets, Libya and Ethiopia in Prophecy, and The King of the South. See, there are so many things that could go wrong in this region. Just think about Sudan, for example. Geopolitical Futures mentioned that Sudan was sort of bribed by Saudi Arabia to switch sides, right? But do you remember that Sudan is a nation that harbored Osama bin Laden? Sudan was closely allied with Iran. Iran was building factories to manufacture weapons, and they were doing that in Sudan. Sudan was allowing Iran to do this, and one of those factories, you might remember, was bombed by Israel in 2012. And then just like that, Saudi Arabia pays Sudan a little bit of money, and Sudan decide to switch sides. So it's a crisis like this that can just make a country vulnerable to manipulation. So what happened with Sudan, it can happen in Ethiopia, and that is why it's important for us to watch what's happening in Ethiopia. I'd like to play now a clip from Mr. Gerald Fleury's Key of David program from August 2012, titled Ethiopia in Prophecy. Clip one.
So watch Libya and Ethiopia. Watch those nations and see what happens. What Iran really wants is control over the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, and they have a strategy, and you'll see that very clearly. And can you imagine if a nation gets control of that sea lane through there, the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, can you imagine what that is going to add to their military might? Now, it's not going to turn out like Iran thinks it is, but I'll tell you, there is going to be a power that's going to get control of that trade route, and it's going to shock the world because they do get control of it.
So Iran does have a strategy to control this region. That's what Gerald Fleury said in that program. And that's essentially what Geopolitical Futures said in its article. And essentially, that's what IOL News said. Remember when it said extremists that want to take advantage of this situation and let the genie of ethnic violence out of the bottle? That's what we've been talking about, and it's all based on Bible prophecy. There's a prophecy in Daniel chapter 11 that talks about that. Mr. Fleury actually started emphasizing prophecies involving Ethiopia from as far back as January 27, 2011. And back then, Ethiopia was fairly stable. It wasn't in the news as much as it is right now. But now, it's on the precipice. Now, I want to play again another clip from that Key of David program from Mr. Gerald Fleury, and this is clip two.
So how could I have possibly known that this was going to happen when there was no news or no real information at all to support that? There weren't any facts, really, to support what I said. Well, it all gets back to Bible prophecy. God lives and God speaks. And fulfilled prophecy is one of the great proofs of the Bible that God exists and that His Word is inspired and an absolute authority you can trust. So let's take a look at that prophecy one more time and remind you what it says. And it's a prophecy really about quite a large number of nations here, several of them anyhow. Verse 40, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over." So in this end time, we've said many times, there's going to be a clash between Germany and the Holy Roman Empire or the king of the north and the king of the south, which is Iran and radical Islam. Notice verse 43, but he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. So here we have three different nations that are talked about, and I discussed every one of them on that January 27, 2011 TV program, and said that Libya and Ethiopia also is about to turn toward radical Islam.
So there you have it. Ethiopia is a country that we need to watch. As Mr. Fleury said, it's going to turn to radical Islam, and what we're seeing right now could be something that Iran could take advantage of to get more control of Ethiopia. And what I think is remarkable is that Ethiopia is identified in the Bible by the same name it uses today. Back in 2011, there wasn't a whole lot of facts to back these prophecies, but now we're having all facts. We're having a lot of news coming out of Ethiopia to back up and support what the Bible has prophesied. And this really is exciting. You're listening to Anthony Chibarire, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments or feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The King of the South is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the literature tab to select your free booklet.
Trumpet Daily.
Let's now shift our focus from East Africa and let's go to West Africa, Nigeria specifically. I'm sure many of you still remember the hashtag Bring Back Our Girls. Well, it's from April 2014 when a Nigerian terrorist group called Boko Haram shocked the world when it kidnapped almost 300 girls from a boarding school in northeastern Nigeria. Well, last week on Monday, they did it again. They kidnapped 110 girls at another school in northeastern Nigeria. And the Nigerian president described the incident as a national disaster. And it really is. Nigeria is just losing control of this group. I just saw today a report that said that some members of the Nigerian military have been selling their weapons to this terrorist group, Boko Haram. So it is indeed a national disaster. But as horrific as that was, it wasn't the worst of Boko Haram's atrocities. Boko Haram has killed more people than it has kidnapped, some 20,000 of them. Its main goal is to stamp out Western influence. In fact, the name Boko Haram means Western education is forbidden. And their main goal is just to stamp out Western influence and establish Nigeria as an Islamic caliphate. There was a video from a few years ago in which its leader once explained this. He said this: "You people should understand that we only obey Allah. We tread the path of the Prophet Muhammad. We hope to die on this path." Now, that's a very dangerous mindset, and you really cannot reason with people like that. And Nigeria desperately needs help. At some point, Nigeria was negotiating with Boko Haram, but can you really negotiate with a group like that? In fact, some of those negotiations from a few years ago, Boko Haram did release some of those 300 girls that it kidnapped, but it still has maybe about 100 or so of them, and they did it again just last week. So Nigeria desperately needs help, and it appears that it's turning to people who understand that Islamist groups like Boko Haram, which only obey Allah, cannot be reasoned with. It's turning to Europe and Germany. It's turning to other countries also, like the United States, but it's turning a lot of its attention to Europe and Germany. And we watch for this, again, because of Bible prophecy. Back in 2015, the Nigerian president at the time went to Germany to ask for Germany's technological assistance in fighting Boko Haram. It said this, quote, "The area we expect our development partners, especially countries like Germany, is to help us in terms of our security architecture, training, and providing us with some modern equipment." Now, the following year, the German president at the time visited Nigeria and pledged $50 million on behalf of Europe to help Nigeria fight terrorism. The German president said this, "We as Europe will support that initiative with $50 million. Good governance is not possible without peace. Germany will support Nigeria in the fight against Boko Haram, and we will continue to provide support for the displaced people on a humanitarian basis." Well, Bible prophecy does indicate that Germany and Europe will want to have a stronger influence in Africa, not only out of concerns about Islamic terrorism, because it can easily reach into Europe from its bases in Northern Africa and Western Africa. But that's not Germany's only concern. It's not only concerned about Islamic terrorism. The Bible prophecy indicates that Germany will want a stronger influence in Africa to protect its economic interests as well. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about those interests after the break. Again, this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States. One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror. Their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We were talking about Nigeria, and now we'll talk about Ghana. It's right there on the worst of Africa. On Wednesday, German Foreign Policy released a report titled Catching Up in Africa. And I'd like to read some excerpts from it. And some of them will tie in with what we were talking about a little earlier with regards to China. The report says this: Today, the People's Republic of China is by far Africa's most important trading partner and will most likely become the continent's largest investor in the foreseeable future. According to estimates, last year, only 1.9% of Africa's new foreign direct investments were from Germany, whereas around 24% were from China. Building upon China's extensive business activities, Beijing's political influence has begun to grow enormously. Listen to this. This, on the other hand, has provoked the German government, which does not want to cede its leading position on the African continent to its Chinese rival. So again, as we said earlier, Africa is becoming this new battleground in a resource war, and these big powers are fighting it out one way or another. The report continued. According to declarations by German Chancellor Angela Merkel over the weekend, Europe must now unleash a strong economic dynamic in Africa, analogous to the Marshall Plan in Europe in the aftermath of the Second World War, which should include launching major infrastructure projects, support for startups, and the development of the middle class. German Foreign Policy concludes by discussing Germany's military ties with African countries like Ghana, and it said this: The military relations are a suitable compensation for what, until now, has been seen as the meager economic influence, at least for the time being. So keep watching Germany's economic and political and military expansion, not only in Europe, but also in the Middle East and in Africa. It's a trend that we have emphasized a lot at thetrumpet.com. Now we'll move a little further down in Africa to Southern Africa. Now in the past 4 months, we've witnessed dramatic change of leadership in two countries in Southern Africa. I'm talking, of course, about Zimbabwe and South Africa. So what does the future hold for these two countries? What does the future hold for the 55 nations in Africa? Well, I've got some good news, and I've got some bad news, and I've got some great news. I'll start with the good news. Zimbabwe is no longer ruled by the 94-year-old Robert Mugabe. He was a brutal dictator who allegedly killed his political opponents. His economic policies were a disaster. They destroyed the economy. Inflation just skyrocketed to levels that are just hard to fathom. And his economic policies and other policies, they exacerbated racial divisions in the country. So Zimbabwe certainly is better off without him. In South Africa, Jacob Zuma is gone. He was unbelievably corrupt, and that's not an exaggeration. He was facing hundreds of counts of corruption. You might remember him for singing songs about killing white farmers with machine guns. So South Africa certainly is better off without him. The bad news, though, is that the men who replaced Mugabe and Zuma are not perfect themselves. In fact, they aren't that much different from the people they replaced. In Zimbabwe, President Emmerson Mnangagwa was and still is a longtime member of Mugabe's ZANU-PF party. And even though he has been clamping down on corruption and reversing some of Mugabe's policies, many of the people who helped him remove Mugabe are corrupt individuals themselves. And now Mnangagwa, he has retained them into power. So you still have a lot of corruption regardless. And now he has been in power for a little more than 100 days, and not much has improved. In South Africa, the new president, Cyril Ramaphosa, was and still is a longtime member of Zuma's ANC party. His recent cabinet appointments include many corrupt ANC officials. Trumpet writer Andrew Miller wrote an article for thetrumpet.com about President Ramaphosa's pledge to seize farmland from white farmers without compensation. And this is the new president who replaced Jacob Zuma. But here's the worst part. Here's the worst part about this pledge from Ramaphosa. It is something that was proposed by a former ANC member, Julius Malema. Now, if you don't know Julius Malema, let me tell you, he is bad news. He was fired by the ANC because he was just too radical, even for the ANC. In 2006, Malema said this: "We are not calling for the slaughtering of white people, at least for now." Those were his words. He said, "White minorities, be warned. We will take our land. It doesn't matter how. It's coming. Unavoidable. The land will be taken by whatever means necessary." So what you're seeing now is President Ramaphosa appearing to be adopting some of Malema's policies. Of course, Ramaphosa is not coming out with the rhetoric like Malema's, but, you know, as Andrew wrote in his article, it is policies like this that will only embolden crazy people like Julius Malema. So that's the bad news. But the great news I want to share with you is that these nations have tremendous potential. They've got some wholesome farmland, ideal climate, some of the world's largest deposits of minerals such as gold, platinum, and diamonds. South Africa, for example, in terms of just mineral deposits, is actually the wealthiest country in the world, according to Citigroup. And very soon, God is going to see to it that there is righteous leadership in these countries. Leadership that will use that wealth to benefit its citizens, and no foreign power or terrorist will exploit them. Whether it's South Africa, Zimbabwe, Nigeria, Ghana, Somalia, Sudan, Ethiopia, peace and prosperity will soon come to Africa. But it will be a little bit of a rough ride before then. Well, speaking of peace and prosperity, I'd like to conclude the program by talking about an ambassador for world peace. But first, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I have with me here a quote from a booklet titled Ambassador for World Peace. This is how the booklet begins. In the 1970s and 1980s, one private citizen was jetting around the world and meeting with hundreds of world leaders. He met presidents, prime ministers, kings, emperors, princes, legislators, ambassadors, generals, officers, mayors, judges, scientists, educators, magnates, and executives. He talked with heads of states and heads of government in their offices at their invitations. Who was this man? He wasn't a head of government. He wasn't even a government official. He wasn't a captain of industry. He wasn't even a businessman. He wasn't a billionaire or millionaire. He was a man named Herbert W. Armstrong. And by the way, this program is coming to you live from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. And the work that we strive to do is merely a continuation of what Herbert Armstrong did while he was alive. He visited a lot of countries, and and some of those countries include the countries we were talking about, countries in Africa. The booklet continues, Mr. Armstrong was a man who actually gave up his business to follow what he read in the Bible. He followed God and lived for decades in poverty. He eventually led a church and a college, and he did not seek to become a world traveler. A friend of prime ministers, an unofficial ambassador for world peace, he didn't seek that. The booklet continues, even if he had tried, he never could have achieved a fraction of what he ended up doing. What Mr. Armstrong did in the 1970s and 80s was nothing short of miraculous. His message reached millions of people around the entire world. And again, those millions included some people in Africa. And in the 1970s, he met with the following leaders from Africa. The Prime Minister of Tunisia, the Prime Minister of Morocco, an official from Senegal, the President of Liberia, the President of Ivory Coast, the Mayor of the capital city of Namibia, the President of South Africa, the Prime Minister of South Africa, the King of Swaziland, the Prime Minister of Zimbabwe, a diplomat from Tanzania, two presidents from Kenya, a Prime Minister from Sudan, and the Emperor of Ethiopia. Herbert Armstrong truly had the whole world on his radar, and he truly was an ambassador for world peace. And that's what we strive to do here at kpcg.fm and at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like a free copy of Ambassador for World Peace, please visit thetrumpet.com, click on the literature tab, and you can get your free copy of that booklet. And it talks about the work that Herbert W. Armstrong did in Africa, but really many other parts of the world, in Europe, in the Middle East, in the Americas. He traveled a lot, and he had a message that reached all countries in this world. And that is what we strive to do. We strive to reach everyone in every part of the world with this message that God is soon going to intervene in the affairs of man and replace the corrupt governments of this world with this government that will bring peace and prosperity for all. Well, that's all for today. Thank you for joining us today on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Your regular host, Stephen Fleury, will be back with you on Monday. Again, if you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Have a good day.